This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Nigeria needs to decide whether we are a secular state or we are a religious state.
That was Nigerian human rights lawyer Martin Obono on efforts to expunge blasphemy from the Constitution in the wake of the death of a Christian student for comments she made about Islam. Details coming up. Also, Ethiopia is launching a crackdown on journalists and activists. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The severed head of a lawmaker who went missing last week in Nigeria's southeastern state of Anambra has been discovered. According to a Reuters report, Oke Chukwu Okoye, a legislator in the Anambra State Assembly, and his aide vanished on May 15th. State police spokesman Tochukwu Ekenga said Okoye's head was found Saturday night in a park in the Inewi local government area. The Anambra governor is offering a 10 million naira, equivalent to $24,000 reward, for information on the killers. The government accuses separatists of carrying out a spate of killings and kidnappings. Early this month, gunmen beheaded two soldiers in neighboring Imo State. The government blamed the banned indigenous people of Biafra IPOB group, which denied responsibility. The southeast homeland of the Igbo ethnic group is agitating to secede from Nigeria. The IPOB group has been leading those calls. Violence in the southeast is another layer of insecurity in Nigeria, where kidnappings for ransom are common in the northwest, and an Islamist insurgency has been going on for more than a decade in the northeast. Nigerian Christians on Sunday held a national remembrance for a student who was killed in northern Sokoto State this month over allegations of blasphemy. The Christian Association of Nigeria, CAN, said the protest for Deborah Yakubu was a reminder of the many threats to religious freedom in the country. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The decision to hold a quiet march and prayer sessions for Deborah Yakubu in various parishes was announced by the Christian Association of Nigeria late Saturday. Officials also explained the planned protest had received pushback from some state authorities who restricted protests. The association was also worried about safety after it said some Muslim groups threatened to hold a counter-protest as well. Many churches across the country, however, complied with the CAN's directive. Only a few members of some churches marched on the streets close to their parishes. Bayo Oladeji is the spokesperson for the Christian Association of Nigeria.
Every local church have that program today in honor of Deborah, and they pray for the nation, pray for the church in Nigeria. And we don't want a clash with the government. So Muslim fundamentalists, they issued a statement, they said they wanted to protest today. We don't want a situation whereby they will be targeting our people and be attacking them.
Deborah Yakubu was a student of the Shehu Shagari College of Education in Sokoto State. She was beaten, stoned, and her body burned May 12th by students who accused her of making blasphemous comments against the Prophet Muhammad in an online classroom group. Yakubu had allegedly cautioned her Muslim counterparts to stop making religious posts on the WhatsApp group chat. Nigerian authorities, including President Muhammadu Buhari, a Muslim, condemned the student's killing. Oladeji says Nigerian Christians are often targeted and attacked on the basis of religion.
We believe that the church in Nigeria is under a siege. We believe that the church in Nigeria is being persecuted. We believe that, you notice that those who are purportedly to have been arrested because of the brother's gruesome murder, they were merely arranged for causing public disturbance. It's not that they were arraigning them for being responsible for the murder of this young girl.
Last week, two suspects arrested over Yakubu's murder were arraigned in court. Sokoto State authorities Friday lifted a curfew imposed last week after protests broke out in the state calling for the release of the two suspects. Blasphemy is punishable under Nigeria's secular law as well as Islamic law, known as Sharia. Human rights groups have launched a petition demanding authorities expunge blasphemy from the constitution. Human rights lawyer Martin Obono started the petition.
We need to get to a point where Nigeria needs to decide whether we are a secular state or we are a religious state. Because you do not now declare under Section 10 of the Constitution that people have the rights and freedom of thoughts and religion. So when you have, if I express myself about this particular, my thoughts about this particular religion, I shouldn't be criminalized for that.
Last November, the United States removed Nigeria from its list of countries of particular concern over religious freedom violations. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News.
Ethiopia is launching a crackdown on journalists and activists. The Associated Press reports that the massive operation across the country has led to more than 4,500 arrests in one region alone. Dubbed a law enforcement operation, the crackdown began after the administration of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed on Friday cited the need to protect citizens and ensure the survival of the nation. However, rights groups are expressing alarm. Some journalists are leaving the country amid threats and intimidation by the government and non-state actors. Tigist Shumiye, a sister of prominent Ethiopian journalist Salomon Shumiye, told the AP he was arrested at his home Friday by people in civilian clothing. Earlier in May, the Ethiopian Mass Media Professionals Association urged the government to end the imprisonment of journalists, citing an increasing trend in arbitrary arrests. Ethiopia's deadly war was subsided in recent months after the government announced a humanitarian truce and Tigray forces accepted it. But killings, rights violations, and mass arrests are being reported in several parts of the country, notably in the Oromia and Amhara regions. South Africa's eastern KwaZulu-Natal province still recovering from flooding that devastated coastal regions just over a month ago has been hit by another deluge. Torrential rains this weekend have again left many homeless, but so far have not caused the widespread death and destruction of the previous flood. Nevertheless, damage and suffering are once again significant. Darren Taylor reports.
KwaZulu-Natal's barely started rebuilding roads, buildings and houses destroyed by floods and mudslides a few weeks ago, not to mention the estimated 500 lives lost. Some bodies are still missing. Now, there's more grief.
We're going to expect horrendous rain in many parts of KZN, especially on the north coast, cyclonic weather coming from Gaborone.
Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman of the Gift of the Givers organization is coordinating aid efforts in KwaZulu-Natal, or KZN. He says relief work can't begin in earnest yet, as meteorologists are warning of yet more danger blowing into the region.
Water levels at the sea will rise substantially beyond 3 meters, which means there will be a back flow into rivers, which means smaller rivers will become much bigger and streams will become much bigger. People shouldn't be on low-lying floodplains. And of course, the biggest preventative action that anyone can take right now is not to be on the roads.
But, says Suleiman, despite the tragedy of 6 weeks ago, some people aren't heeding warnings.
People don't understand that it is highly deceptive when you see the water on the road. And the undercurrents can be very, very strong. And water can suddenly take your wheels and your bonnet and move your way. There's very, very high risk. So it's better to be off the roads altogether right now.
The veteran international aid worker says he's heard that a few people drowned this weekend, but nothing on the scale of what happened in mid-April.
People are being evacuated, especially pensioners from old age homes and pension villages. In other areas, the storm waters are being blocked. water's coming into the homes, but there's nothing life-threatening so far. There are some mudslides, roads have been blocked. All our teams are on standby, but they're not going to be able to do much because of the road situation going to be very difficult. But once everything is settled, we will do exactly what we did the first time round.
That, says Suleiman, mainly involves getting food, shelter, medicines and other essentials to people displaced again by torrents. But he adds that poor people, when advised to move out of homes threatened by floodwaters, often refuse to do so.
People are afraid they will lose their possessions. It's not so much about moving away and taking the precautions to move to high ground. Nobody ever does that. Not in South Africa, not in any other part of the world, especially among Koro communities. Nobody ever does that. Even when there's fires, people don't move away from the fire site. Fire can be raging, but they'll sit there and wait to make sure they get back into their house, you know, the informal home, because that's everything that they own. And the same with flood damage. They will not move. And that's why you find that suddenly people get washed away in huge numbers because nobody wants to move to higher ground. Nobody believes that the water level can rise so fast.
A lot of water fell this weekend over parts of South Africa that usually only receive rain in summer. Some weather experts say the unusual patterns are only the beginning of the fallout from climate change in Southern Africa. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. Please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. As the World Economic Forum gets down to serious business today in Davos, Switzerland, the South African team says their country is open for business despite COVID-19 lockdowns, corruption and xenophobia. 37 business and institutional leaders have accompanied Mamaoloko Kubaya, Minister of Human Settlement and Head of Cabinet's Economic Cluster, to Davos. They say they are there to sell the country's economic recovery plan, a key tool that the government has designed to attract investment. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Kubai told VOA from Davos that her delegation is taking every opportunity it gets at the meeting to explain why South Africa should be the first choice for every company looking for an attractive investment destination.
Firstly, is to reconfirm our approach in terms of implementation of our economic reconstruction and recovery for the country, but also reaffirming our position in terms of law and order, in terms of the riots that had happened, because those are some of the concerns that investors would have.
She said her delegation is also looking at attracting investors interested in public-private partnerships to create much-needed jobs. The South African economy has been battered by COVID-19, which forced some businesses to close while others had to downsize. The country's unemployment rate has risen to a record 35%. However, Sithembile Ntombela, Acting Chief Executive Officer at Brand South Africa, says the country not only provides low-risk opportunities with long-term returns for investors, but it is also the gateway to the entire African continent.
We talk about our stability of the financial institution. We talk about our governance and our rule of law and how we protect investors. We talk about interventions that are being implemented currently to deal with issues around corruption.
The South African delegation is also pitching opportunities in mining, agriculture and infrastructure development. Up to 2,500 delegates are attending the Davos meeting, which ends Thursday. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Over 1,000 delegates, including government and business leaders, as well as representatives from development and financial institutions, gathered in Rwanda last week for two major conferences. The meetings focused on advancing a clean and inclusive energy transition around the world. VOA's Ruben Chama has more from Nairobi.
At the conference in the Rwandan capital, Kigali, calls intensified for countries to deliver universal energy access while putting the world on track toward limiting climate change. Giles Bristow is Director of Programs at Ashden. It's a UK-based charity working to accelerate transformative climate innovation and increase access to affordable, renewable energy globally.
And what I've taken away this week is some shocking statistics around energy access. Nearly 800 million people still do not have access to clean energy, and 3 billion are forced to cook on wood or charcoal, which is really damaging to people's health. There's been a global effort to tackle this for many years, and the numbers of these are not only stubborn, but they're on the rise again. Even more shockingly, what I discovered is that of those people without access to clean energy, 1 in 8 are in fact refugees.
The United Nations Development Programme says 2.6 billion people, a third of the world's population, still do not have access to safe, clean fuels and technologies for cooking. Over 75% of them live in sub-Saharan Africa. But Bristow says Africa is buzzing with homegrown climate innovation and talent.
By and large, the technologies exist, they're there, to drive this transition to clean cooking through solar, wind, batteries, e-mobility and energy efficiency. The business models also exist, although these will still struggle to be affordable to the poorest and most marginalized people in Africa, people who live on less than $2 a day. And we're going to need to continue to use philanthropy to help reduce the cost of providing lighting, power and clean cooking.
For more than 20 years, Ashden has backed climate innovators in low-income countries. Bristow says the charity is now focused on the skills and training needed to deliver universal energy access.
This year, we've come across organizations like Kakuma Ventures in Kakuma Refugee Camp in Kenya and Power Trust Africa, who operate in Ugandan refugee camps. Both these organizations are providing sustainable, clean power for the internet and for Wi-Fi connections for small businesses. And this allows training for youth in IT and e-commerce. It allows small businesses and medium-sized enterprises to flourish in these refugee and humanitarian settings.
Ashden, along with partners in Africa, are calling for November's COP27 climate talks in Egypt to focus on boosting energy access. At the Sustainable Energy for All Forum in Kigali, and amid increased pressure from the climate crisis and the war in Ukraine on the world's energy systems, the UN called for vastly increased public and private investment to transform energy systems in support of a just energy transition. Enagro is a tech startup growing sustainable rural demand in Africa. Harun Leopold is its chief executive officer.
The biggest reason why energy isn't everywhere is because we don't really have a market for it in Africa. If you have a market, you have supply equaling demand. And right now, the cost of supply is hundreds, if not thousands of times more expensive than what people really can afford on a month-to-month basis.
The International Energy Agency says the number of people without access to electricity in sub-Saharan Africa increased in 2020 for the first time since 2013. Ruben Chama for VOA News, Nairobi.
Google has added 24 more languages to its translation service, including 10 from Africa. They include Tiwi, spoken in Ghana, Bambara in Mali, Lingala, used in Central Africa, and Tigrinya and Oromo in Ethiopia. The new service also includes Krio, a language spoken in Sierra Leone by about 4 million people. From Freetown, reporter Eric Kawa looks at what this means for the West African country.
Many in Sierra Leone are welcoming the new development as Krio accounts for more than 80% of daily interactions in the country. For Mina Bilkis, an educator and linguist in Freetown, the move means representation and recognition.
This is very awakening. It's very affirming because a lot of kids like myself, we grew up not seeing that representation. Krio is a language that I had to pick up when I came to Sierra Leone because my parents never spoke it to me. They're academics and they believe that you should speak English because that's how they were conditioned. But I wanted to learn where I'm originally from. So I made that conscious effort to learn Krio. I read dictionaries, I read books in Krio, but it didn't really make sense until I started to learn French. And when I learned phonetics in French at Forbay College, that really put it into context. I was like, oh, I can now read Krio. There's so many overlaps. so to speak, that I was like, oh, we also have this in French. Oh, we also have this in Creole.
With the world as a global village, language plays a key role in breaking barriers of communication. Michael Duff is an Australian freelance journalist working in Sierra Leone. He says the app will make it easier for non-Creole-speaking people to translate documents and conversations.
Well, I think it's great that Creole has been added to the Google Translate system. I think firstly because it kind of recognizes Creole as a global language and is putting it in there with all the other languages of the world. I guess when you're living and working anywhere where the language is not your first language, it's always a bit of a challenge. And of course, we try and learn Creole and we try and speak it as much as we can. But if there's things that we, you know, that we can't translate ourselves, then it's going to be really helpful to have Google Translate there, you know, as a backup option.
Sierra Leone has a growing number of content creators. Fode Isadin Kamara, popularly called Isadin K, is a renowned YouTuber from Sierra Leone with a total of 380,000 plus views. He thinks this development could be used as a springboard to add the West African country to the YouTube partnership program, which, among other benefits, allows revenue sharing from advertisement placed on a user's content page.
The Google partnership program is something that every Sierra Leonean content creator has been craving for, has been praying for, to see that it actually happens. Sierra Leone is being part of the YouTube partnership program, but till now we haven't succeeded, because that is a serious challenge for us. Because you cannot be creating content the rest of your life, just creating content day and night and not getting anything from it. Even if it is fun, it is better to earn something from the fun you're making.
According to Google, this advance is an exciting first step towards supporting more translation technologies for under-resourced languages. The internet giant says over 300 million people speak the 24 recently added world languages. They include Bhojpuri, spoken by up to 50 million people in northern India, and Lingala, used by over 45 million people across Central Africa. Many other African languages were already available on Google Translate, including Amharic, Hausa, Yoruba, Chichewa, Swahili, and Somali. Google Translate now has a total of 133 languages, reaching hundreds of millions of people around the world. Many observers say they hope the new development will boost the sharing of important information and help accelerate development. For VOA Africa, I'm Eric Kawa in Freetown, Sierra Leone.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Pete Hundley, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo, and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and